Thank you. All lines are now bridged.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the USCDI Task Force. Of the members with us today, we have Kerry O'Malley, co-chair, Stephen Lane, Brett Oliver, and Ken Kawamoto. Are there any other members on the phone? And hopefully others will join soon. I'll turn it over to you, Terry, to get us started.
Okay, that sounds good. This will be a quick group, I think. So anyway, welcome aboard. So let's throw the slides up. What do we got? Back one, just our, yeah, so that's what we're going to do. We're really going to go over primarily the work plan, sort of what we're proposing we do, and then the calendar, just sort of when we're going to do it. And the job is going to be to work on the level promotion criteria. So, next slide, please. This is what we're supposed to do. And next slide. So this is our calendar. So we have three more empty rows before we get to our high-tech presentation on the 17th. So it means we kind of know what we have to do, and we'll have to figure out how we're going to fit it into those three sessions. But what I'd like to, so Ken and Brett and Stephen, the questions, I guess, let me propose to you an approach that Christina and I have thought about, and then just take your comments and modify it as needed. But the approach we thought to really, what we wanted to do is to add the details to the ONC outline, which is pretty high level, and they really asking us to think about some of the more detailed parts of their proposal. And what we will do is essentially parse the ONC draft, you know, take every important noun and verb and make sure we understand what it means and what it means when they're combined. And Christina had a really nice way of thinking about it. We'd like to build a user guide for getting a data element through the USCDI promotion process. So what at each step would a proposer, a submitter, a steward need to make sure happens in order to keep the advancement going? So really gear it to the people who are going to move the data elements through the process. And with that in mind, that's sort of our high-level approach. So let me stop there.
I like it. I think it's a good way to think about it.
Okay. Ken, Brett, any modifications, additions, corrections?
No, I agree. I like the thought of a user guide, per se, for folks to understand and move it forward.
Yeah. Good. All right.
Hey, guys, I'm on. Sorry, I got stuck waiting.
Welcome, Christina.
Thank you. Hi, Terry. Yeah. Hi, crew.
I just explained sort of the approach we're taking, which is taking your term user's guide is what we're going to aim for. So if that's going to be our approach, sounds good. It's wonderful just having, you know, five of us on the line. We'll go along pretty quickly. So then the schedule is that we've got three more weeks, well, four counting today, so we may try to get some work done on some of these transitions. And there are really four areas, four transitions from level to level that we need to work on. And it's really going from the comment bucket for anyone who submits a suggestion, and that includes going over in detail what the application process looks like. What's the application that has to be filled out? What's the information the proposer has got to include? And then it's going from comment to level one, level one to level two, level two to level two USCDI. So really four steps. So that's what we're going to have to do. And Christine and I thought starting with the final transition from level three to USCDI, this made sense to us because the issues there are really two main issues. One is, has it reached the correct degree of technical maturity, which you guys can certainly contribute to. Let's define what that means. And the other piece is, so there's a political, not so much political, strategic piece, and it's really the ONC and HITAC review, where you know the national coordinator determines whether this really does meet a national need, the costs, the benefits outweigh the costs, and so on. So we probably also want to comment on things that we can only imagine, and that is, what is ONC thinking they need to have in order to make those determinations? So maybe we may push that back to ONC. Anyway, that's the proposal. Christina, do you want to straighten that out?
That was a great overview. Thank you.
All right. Does that make sense, gang?
Yep.
Guys?
Yes, sir.
Right. Okay. So, with that in mind, can somebody run the Google Doc and put it up on the screen? And Adam, are we drafting you as the Google doctor?
Sure, can do. Give me a sec.
So we can do is, well, let's just take a look at, sorry, we go over the Google Doc and I'll just explain to you what has been done so far. And Stephen, I haven't gotten to see your edits, so we'll see them now.
No, I didn't edit. I wrote them down so I could share them verbally.
Okay. All right. So let me just take you through the Google Doc broad sweep. So columns A through D really line up, as Stephen suggested last call, just lines up what we did in A and B, what we did in 2018, and C and D, what ONC is proposing this year. And then we just take down the levels. And then if you go to columns E and F and G, okay. So basically E was just some general thoughts. F is what we're going to fill in today. And then G is just some initial steps on what we need to do to build the user's guide. Okay? So that's the general outline of the Google Doc. So, Adam, how about if you... So, let's go through A, B, C, and D first just quickly, because as we all suspected, it really lines up pretty well. The items in column B that are crossed, that are stricken through, those all refer to the work group, the data element work group that we proposed, which is now kind of irrelevant. So those are just stricken. But the other items pretty much crosswalk from last year to this year, which is good. So you want to go all the way down, Adam? That'd be great. And then the only slight twists were that in column D as kind of a header for each level. I just put in sort of how I was thinking about that particular following section. So if you go down a little bit more, so when you get to USCDI, it was really sort of the strategic considerations, because we've got the technical maturity, and then the question is the last four rows, what's the calculation ONC is going to make regarding its readiness to actually be admitted to USCDI?
Yeah, I liked the way you categorized those.
Okay.
Hey, scroll up to row 12 again. Looks like there may have been a change made since I downloaded this. Okay, hold tight. Okay. Now, so in 12E, there's this little typo there. There's two independent systems.
I mean, TWP doesn't do it? Okay.
Yeah, you know, I told you I read it, you know.
I missed spell check.
And then I had some more substantive comments on rows 18 and 19 when you're ready.
Yeah, go ahead. Because I think we're going to start in sort of rows 15 on.
So in row 18, D.
Yeah.
You talk
Adam,
about
you can...
how it. Yeah. Yep. How it impacts healthcare costs.
Yeah.
And it just struck me as I read that not all data that warrants exchange and inclusion in the USCDI will necessarily impact healthcare costs.
Right.
And I noticed over in column G, you know, you sort of specified this idea that in order to move forward, you have to be able to demonstrate that it impacts costs. And I couldn't think of a specific example, but I mean, there's going to be stuff that people want to exchange that isn't about money.
Right.
So I just wanted us to be cautious about assuming that cost was a required criteria or cost impact.
I don't see this as a criteria, though. I see it as just it's just how it impacts healthcare costs. Like, we're noting anything. Like,
well,
is it going to be a cost of vendors?
The phrasing in G, provide documentation and literature that demonstrates impacts on cost. There may not be impacts on cost, is what I'm saying. So there may not be.
Maybe you should say if applicable.
Yeah, that's all.
Yeah. all right. Yeah. No, I think that's a good point. You know, again, we're sort of trying to get inside the decision process for ONC. And I don't know how any of them are going to, how these individual items are going to be weighed. You know, maybe it's just an aggregate, maybe you only need one. But I think any guidance we can give to the user to say, you know, once you get it technically matured, be prepared to defend it against these following issues.
Right. So the other one I thought of was right below that in 19D, where we have estimated number of providers, and I would just say providers / stakeholders. Because here again, you know, the world is much bigger than us providers.
Right.
And not all data that warrants exchange will directly impact providers.
Yeah, and I think it's when we say documentation and literature, that's also a really high bar to say it has to have gone through peer-reviewed journal publication and acceptance and publication before it would be considered. Because, for example, how many people have done a peer-reviewed publication and literature on the benefits of sharing a patient's name across the network? Right, like
right.
It seems silly, but like that's sort of what we're asking, which seems excessive.
Well, right. So it may include published literature or evidence. So maybe our best guess is good enough. It's going to be 1.2 million stakeholders that are going to use this. Where did you get that information from? Well, so again, it's just what sort of guidance can we give? And I think it was this really good point that.
I think this is along the lines of the overall benefits and costs. It's big picture. It's please provide as much information you can on the benefits, which may include financial benefits,
yeah,
and, you know, and anticipated costs of supporting this, where, for example, I would assume if you have a variety of EHR vendors who've tested it and can say, hey, you know, this was a relatively easy thing for us to add and we already capture it in structured form, et cetera, like maybe just that statement or experience can speak to the cost rather than, you know, a formal study on it, you know?
All right, so maybe that's a good point. So maybe we just add that as a suggestion for the user, you know, solicit estimates from the testing community or whatever we want to call them.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, and for all these, it may be useful to just, you know, take a real example and sort of, for example, the things we think will next come through USCDI and just talk through that. You know, for example, are free text clinical notes already in this level 5? And if not, you know, how would we justify free text clinical notes being shared?
Right. I think they're already in, or will, hopefully.
And maybe conversely, this always brings up the question of how many of the things that currently are required and part of ARCH, et cetera, actually would be able to meet these criteria. And I'd suspect a lot of them could not.
That's a very good point. Okay. Yeah, put that one down, Adam, because that implies we need to circle back to kind of look at what's currently in USCDI, what's currently teed up. That's a great point.
So on this, as we're kind of talking through this, the technical maturity is more black and white, but then the nationwide applicability, we may or may not be able to answer this. Like a data element may meet all the technical requirements, and obviously has a lot of interest from industry and stakeholders if it's made it through to be in USCDI based on the technical maturity. I'm thinking back to our recommendations from last year when we had recommended ONC do kind of a check on, I'm trying to remember, but it was something with use. So once it got to USCDI, we wanted to say who's actually using the data elements in there. And I'm wondering if this isn't the nationwide applicability, isn't something like a almost a check after it gets into USCDI. Kind of thinking through this out loud, but it does seem more abstract. And I think the technical readiness is probably the more important, because at this stage, people want it if it's gotten this far.
Yeah.
And I hear your concerns that these questions might not be able to be answered.
Yeah. I mean, it's a tricky one because, as you point out, it's you're not going to know who's going to use it or how well it's going to be used until it gets into USCDI and everyone's got to implement it. Yeah, so it's sort of a chicken egg. We think everyone's going to use this, so we're going to put it there, and now you have to use it.
Well, let's be clear what that means, though, right? Like,
Right.
Do we mean by if it's in US CDI, everyone must exchange that data, or are we saying if it's in there and you're already collecting that data in structured form, you must share it in the way that's consistent with that standard, which might involve mapping? And I think examples be good, right? So let's say a data element we identify is should be in here is whether somebody checked a prescription drug monitoring program, the PDMP databases for things like controlled substances for opioids. There's a lot of requirements that, you know, providers check that, you know, before they prescribe. And let's say, you know, that's something that we should, you know, make something that's shared, et cetera. Let's just, like, how would you, like, if you're not collecting it, are you now mandating? So are you saying that if it's being collected, it must be shared? Or are you saying now every single provider in the nation, regardless of their local jurisdictional requirements, would have to capture it in a structured form in a new checkbox? Like, you know, those are the kinds of, like, I think having examples is very useful, right, to say, you know, what do we mean by require? Is it require if you're already capturing it in structured form to send it in this form, or, like, doctors actually need to start capturing it?
Great point. Can maybe, Adam, let's do a big question section, and that'd be one of the big questions.
Well, I think we kind of know that answer, though. If it's in US CDI, that's the base that everybody must exchange.
Okay.
So if it's
but
there,
as you
it's
said, they only have to exchange it if they have it.
Yeah, let me plug another thing, right? Let's say, you know, a patient's pack year history of how much tobacco they've smoked in their lifetime. Like, if that makes it into US CDI, does that mean if your system is capturing it, you must share it in the standard form? Or is it saying, like, if your system is currently not capturing it in structured form, you must now have users start entering it? Like, you know, or does it mean you must give users the ability to enter it, and whether they enter it is up to them? You know, that kind of thing.
Doesn't that get a bit to the definition of certification and what that?
Yeah, I don't see this
it gives you.
I don't see how certification would place any sort of documentation obligation on a provider. You know, in the past, in the differentiation between certification and some of the CMS programs, there might be a certification requirement to support, for example, documentation of a smoking status. And then, you know, back in stage one of meaningful use, there was a meaningful use objective that said, you know, for at least, I think it was 50, I don't remember exactly, 50% of patients over 13, you have to capture a smoking status. And what we're talking about with USCDI, as I understand it, is a standard that might be referenced in the certification program. We could recommend or anticipate that USCDI might be referenced by other programs, that CMS might have incentive programs that would point to components or all of USCDI as documentation expectations. But absent CMS doing that extra work, I don't see how it would imply a documentation piece. I think it would just say that this is a feature that would be in a certified EHR. And similarly, I guess, like, that doesn't limit the users of an EHR in what they can do, right? So just like certification might say you have a structured way to enter smoking status, but it doesn't prevent a user from, and I don't know how you would, from just like putting in their note in an unstructured way, and the patient's a smoker. And so I guess, like, we can't prevent unstructured documentation.
Yeah.
We can't, through this, compel documentation according to the USCDI standard. But we could, I guess, put a baseline out into place if we prioritize certain things to be incorporated into EHR certification by incorporating it into this standard. That's my understanding, at least.
Yeah. That makes sense to me. I think we just need to be very clear, like, how this might play out and what it means to, you know, get it to these levels. And I think specifically, you know, for, like, yeah, like, what is the requirement? And the base requirement seems to be you must have the capacity to allow users to enter it in, you know, a way that can allow the data to be exported in the standard form. And potentially, if it's there in that structured form, you must be capable of transmitting in the standard form, which may have some mapping implications as well.
So I think Sasha, you and Ken are not quite in sync on how this process may.
Well, I don't know. I feel like I understand what Sasha is getting at, and I feel like I'm in sync.
Okay.
Right? Like, we're not saying users must enter it. The one place where I would like clarification of how it's been done is, for example, when smoking status was included as a requirement and that you use these NOMED codes, did that imply a requirement that EHR vendor systems must take their internal codes for smoking status and convert them to SNOMED for export purposes?
Past certification programs haven't done conversions in that way. So you could, it doesn't prohibit it. If you had a structured representation of smoking and you wanted to convert it to map to the SNOMED codes, I think probably many people did. But it's not obligated. The way certification works, it would be once someone starts using a certified product, they would have the capacity to capture from that point forward. If a product provided a conversion opportunity, I think that would be, a competitive differentiator.
Okay.
You know, I think we need to think through this because there are a lot of different flavors of this. You know, there's the, if you happen to have it in structured format, then you should share it. There's the, if you have it, you should be sure to get it into structured format, and then you should share it. There's the, you really need to collect this and in structured format and share it. And each of those is different. And I think we're going to need, and there's probably a few more variations on that. And I think we need to think it through because I don't think everything is the same. I mean, there are some data elements where we're going to say, God damn it, you need to collect this and share it. And there are others where we're going to be much more lenient.
Yeah, I agree. And maybe we should think through where are the gaps that currently exist and where do we think USCDI might go in the future and start running some of those things through, right? And they will probably follow certain patterns like that.
Yeah,
it's certainly worth, I think, categorizing the data elements that way or talking about the process for categorization. But I do think then there's a broader conversation about policy because USCDI inherently, I don't think, has that that additional policy lever that you mentioned, Stephen, of compelling documentation.
Yeah.
It could be a method to identify super high priority items that are recommended for CMS to compel documentation or something along those lines, but it doesn't have that inherently.
And that's where the cost comes in, too. A huge cost would be having users add yet another data point that they have to capture structured, and is it worth it? I agree we should take some examples and think through, like, and just make sure, like, in the end, what we define as the process makes sense for, you know, getting the outcomes we want in a way that's not overly burdensome, right? And makes clear, for example, at this point, we've defined that, you know, this is something that could be shared in a structured way, but nobody's compelling people to do that at this point, where, you know, CMS may step in and say, well, for our purposes, we need you to do this, but, you know, or there's a quality measure now that requires this data point, so de facto we're asking you to enter. But I think it'd be a pretty sad day if the end result was healthcare providers have to, you know, manually collect 20 more data elements.
I think it's a really good conversation to have and important to define out. Just to give you another sort of real-world example, we just had some new telehealth legislation that went into effect July 1st, and we have pay parity with that in the state of Kentucky. And so it was really an important step, and all we have to do is a little O2 modifier for telehealth. Well, at the last minute, the state Medicaid office said that we had to add these two letter codes because they wanted the data just to understand where telehealth services were originating from and where they were taking place. So they asked us just to code these ambulance codes. And I brought up to the group, I said, I don't know that anybody, there's any provider that's ever used these ambulance codes. And the point being is that they mandated that and fortunately rescinded it after the backlash, but they didn't realize they were putting an additional burden on the folks providing the care and didn't think through how we were going to even capture that particular code. So I do think the discussion is really, really well warranted.
Yeah, and I think easiest is when people are already capturing something in structured form in a standard way and let's just start sharing it, right? And then the next easiest is probably people are already capturing in a structured form, not in a standard, using standard codes, and let's see if we can map it. Although that's still a lot of work. Like if you said, you know, procedures that we're sharing now, it's only suggested that you, you know, map the SNOMED, and now we're requiring mapping the SNOMED, for example. Let's say we think that, right? Like that's a ton of work and probably something that individual health systems are going to need to do for existing codes. So that implies things like, well, maybe we should identify the top 50 procedures or 100 procedures that we care about. And at that point, it, you know, the lever would need to be health systems probably doing those mappings. And, you know, what about if we're not collecting it at all, but we think it's important? And, you know, how does that happen? I think the key thing in the end is this benefit versus cost, right? Like we should probably only be doing anything that has a pretty substantial benefit that always costs, with the challenge being the benefits and costs may go to different stakeholders where maybe the overall net benefit is high, but, you know, the people seeing the benefit and the people incurring the costs are different. And how do you make things work then?
Yeah, and that's correct, Ken. And I think that's always going to be the case, that the costs and benefits are not equally distributed. So I think that's going to be a constant issue. So I was thinking that if, as part of certification, I thought there was a requirement that if USCDI data elements, which are now part of certification, that the requirement would be if you collected the data, so if it was available, then it would be in the USCDI structure. It would be structured and then sent however you wanted to send it. But now, is that wrong?
But I think that Sasha's point's really well taken. You said if you collect it, again, yep. People collect stuff, but they don't codify it or put it in fields that allow it to be exchanged. So we have to think, you know, it's the age-old problem of the ejection fraction. You know, if it's lost in free text, yeah, somebody's going to have some NLP thing that's going to pull it out. But if we really want everybody who measures ejection fraction to put it in a codified field that meets certain standards and then exchange that, which we do, you know, we have to say that.
Yeah, I think that's a great example and maybe one we should dwell on a little bit to think through, like what the current state is and what it might mean to say, for example, that share ejection fraction and improve how that's shared. Where, it probably is the case that the current USCDI does allow sharing ejection fraction either as a part of echo reports or as an observation with the link code for the ejection fraction, right? But the reality probably is that, you know, it's probably mostly stuck in free text and there's relatively few health systems that if they get a link, say a fire request with an observation with that link code for ejection fraction, that it's going to automatically, you know, start populating and you're going to get it back. So, you know, if we think something like that is important and the USCDI process is the right one to encourage that to be, you know, more broadly adopted, what does that mean, right? like how would it go through this process? How would ejection fraction reaching level 5 mean, like, you know, things are going to change compared to what's being done now?
So Ken, so you're thinking we should take an example and run through it in detail, kind of what it implies.
I think so.
Would it be easier to take an example that's already happened, like smoking status was the one I threw out earlier?
Yeah, I think so.
Wondering if instead of speculating about ejection fraction, which is we have questions about in our heads, if we took something that's happened in past certification, maybe that would help us wrap our mind around what it might have looked like in each step in the process?
Yeah, I agree.
What I think we ought to do is we should say that there are these three or four different levels of data capture and exchange that might apply depending on the item, and then give an example of each. So I think ejection fraction is what, you know, smoking status is, you know, might, I don't know what's in the current certification, Sasha. Do they specify a standard for capturing smoking status? So maybe smoking status and ejection fraction, you know, we propose that ejection fraction is going to be like smoking status. You know, it has to be, you know, codified, bounded by, you know, a set of data elements, et cetera. But then there are others where we're going to feel differently, and we might want to come up with an example of each.
Sure.
Yeah, and I mean, starting with things that have gone through the process makes sense to me. Maybe if we start with these and identify those patterns and actually specify. And there's nothing like being able to see an example, right? Like if we have something like this, then, you know, this is the process you can expect and the way you would expect to be able to answer these questions. So maybe let's start with what might be one of the simplest, smoking status. And do we have the time in the upcoming calls to maybe basically, you know, update the process by using examples that, you know, fit certain patterns? And does that make sense? I like that a lot.
Yep, that makes sense. Adam, can you add column H and title it smoking status? And then we'll run in parallel with...
And let's define what the pattern is. I think that's a pattern of something that I'm going to speculate. Historically, EHRs have had a structured way to capture it and was it fairly well populated before then? I don't know. But let's use that pattern. I guess first question is, maybe Sasha, you can provide background and talk about like what pattern that fits. Like, was it collected before in structured form, before people started pushing for this in interoperability regs? You know, were people actually populating it, you know, that kind of thing?
Yeah, so my impression from, you know, my own work with our EHR and working with other developers in our trade association is that EHRs had a variety of ways to capture smoking status prior to its inclusion in any sort of certification program. And people, I think, use things like pack years or other methods to quantify or collect that data depending on the feedback they'd had from their users and so forth. The use of that information, I don't have any numbers to kind of quantify, you know, how frequently it was assessed. But I do think it was included in quality measures even, you know, pretty far back in the PQRS programs and so forth. So there might have been data to say, you know, what was being done prior to its inclusion in certification. And then it was a pretty early inclusion in the ONC certification back in the 2011 edition. And also potentially an interesting example, too, because the way in which it was included in the 2011 edition, I think, drew a lot of criticism. So.
And how, refresh my memory on that, how was it?
Oh, yeah. So the 2011 edition expected the use of, I think it was 6 specific SNOMED codes to capture smoking status. and the there was no provision at that time for flexibility or creativity in data capture or mapping. So the ability to do the type of conversions that Ken talked about was a bit limited because of the way the data capture was expected. And people who might have felt like they had a more sophisticated or more granular way to capture the data felt very frustrated. Also, the specific SNOMED terms that were provided for use didn't feel very friendly or intuitive. You know, they'd be phrases like never smoker or current someday smoker. And I think people just felt like that was not the vocabulary they were accustomed to using. And so, you know, I think especially if people had been contented with the method they'd been using prior in documenting pack years or something of that nature, ready to quit, et cetera, and then had to switch to this or supplement with this either replacement or additional documentation of, you know, current someday smoker, never smoker, et cetera, they felt, I think, like that was not the progression of interoperability that maybe they'd hoped for.
Yeah. Thank you. Based on our experience in partners where we had six legacy systems that didn't talk to each other, we had six different ways of capturing smoking. And no one was happy.
But you were capturing it, I guess. So that, I guess, supports the idea that it it was widely done, but not in a consistent way. Yeah.
Exactly. Not inconsistent. Everyone got it, but no one got it the same way. So
maybe a high-level philosophical question too here is, if we get structured data through USCDI, because USCDI itself in the standards could say, at least at, say, like a fire profile level, you know, you must use these codes, you can use these codes, you should use these codes, you can use whatever you want. Like, what is, using this example, if this were being run through today, would we expect that USCDI at the final level would have, like it currently does, this, I think, six or seven or something, SNOMED codes for smoking status, and you must always communicate it that way? Or would we expect it more like, say, labs currently are probably sent, which is you should use Link if it's available, but if it's not, it's okay. You know, I guess I'm just wondering, like, what if we had to do it over again, for example, what would smoking status look like in this process? Would we?
Well, and I think smoking status today is actually different. Unless I'm forgetting, I think they took out the specific, you know, value set of those six codes. First, they revised the value set in the 2014 edition to a different set of like eight codes. And then I think in the 2015 edition, there's no more value set. It's just you should express smoking status using SNOMED, but it's not restricted to a specific set of codes.
Oh, okay.
This sounds like the swinging pendulum, right? I mean, this is the experience that we've all had in trying to do it, and then people pushing back and now trying to do it differently. But I think it's a good lesson for us to think about. You know, and as Ken, as you were talking, I was envisioning a bit of a matrix. You know, for a given data element or data type, you know, does it need to be collected? Yes, no. Does it need to be codified? Yes, no. Does it need to be codified using a specific standard? Yes, no. Does it need to be codified using a specific value set? Yes, no. Because again, we're going to be kind of there are these degrees of requirement that are going to vary. That story of the smoking status is fascinating. Sasha, you should like write that up or put it in and publish that, because I mean, it's a great example. I hadn't heard that story, or I don't remember hearing that story, you know, that we sort of overshot, or people felt we overshot and we backed down, and it's a cautionary tale about how we should go about this.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was just looking at the US score, and you're right. The current version of US score fire profiles for smoking status is very loose. I think it changed maybe. Perhaps,
right, and of course, the things are loose. They're not really interoperable. I mean, you know, many of them, It's going to be case specific, of course, but loose is not necessarily where we want to go, but the cautionary tale is we don't want to get too tight too fast.
And sort of, and it looks like there is a process in place for finding that happy medium, but it's painful and takes a long time and overshoots in both directions. So this is probably an overshoot in the wrong direction, in the loose direction. And likely it would be tightened up on the next version.
I don't know, actually. I don't hear the feedback about the present approach of allowing any SNOMED representation of smoking status that I heard about the previous approaches of having a more constrained value set. I think the other lesson, it's certainly possible the pendulum will swing, but I think the other lesson is simply that there's some sort of balance between introducing a limited expression of an interoperable data element, but then not being able to replace a more sophisticated expression and ending up requiring additional documentation. So one of the frustrating elements of the smoking status in 2011 was that the six codes of differentiating between, you know, current everyday smoker, current someday smoker, and former smoker, and whatever the other three were that I don't remember, didn't really replace the type of documentation people may have been doing prior with respect to readiness to quit, pack years, tobacco use outside of smoking. And so it didn't actually, in the effort to become interoperable, reduce any documentation or replace any documentation. It just supplemented. So it was like you still had to do what you did before, plus pick one of six interoperable terms that didn't really mean that much to people at the time. And so there's maybe a lesson there to say that if we're looking at new things, whether it's ejection fraction or something else, it might seem logical, and I'm sure I would advocate for it at some points, to say, well, let's start with a small representation and grow. But if the small representation just supplements and doesn't actually express information that's already being exchanged effectively, then it actually has an aggravating factor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I'm just looking at the current version and with the eight concepts, and yeah, interesting. Current someday smoker, everyday smoker, light smoker, heavy smoker. I don't know who gains value from distinguishing between someday, everyday, light, and heavy, but that's there. Interesting.
So where does that leave us? So
I think sticking to this example, thinking through, like, how should this, like, assuming somebody comes in and let's just assume smoking is nowhere in USCDI right now. Let's just assume that's the case, right? And, you know, somebody wants to bring in smoking based on this experience. How should this process run, I think, is the question, right? So maybe perhaps we go through these questions from the beginning and sort of walk through how does the USCDI process, how should it address this, which is, I think the notion here is people were collecting this information, understand it to be clinically important. Oftentimes in structured forms, though in different structured forms, and really having different data elements really too. And how does it get from an idea of this is important for us to collect in a standard form to something that's useful? So maybe we should walk it through the process.
Okay. So walk it through from the bottom up or the top, the USCDI back?
I would think it's through the, you know, phase one, phase two, et cetera, just like look through and say, how would it... How would we go through this, and does it make sense the way it would go through it?
Okay. Ben, does that make sense to everybody?
So during the comment phase, somebody say CMS or healthcare providers or the American Cancer Society or somebody would say, like, hey, like, we should probably worry about smoking. It's the number one preventable cause of death in the country, right? So let's share information on it so we can treat it better. I think is somebody would make that argument. And then level one, identify at least one developed use case, including its relevance nationwide exchange.
So anyone can get it into comment.
Yeah.
And then ONC reviews it based on the application form that will be required in order to determine whether it stays in comment until the items are completed on the application form or whether it meets criteria for level one, in which case it goes right to level one or level two.
And I assume if you want to have a better chance, whoever's going to propose it would propose it with information that would help it gain level one, level two kind of thing, right? So we probably isn't going to rely on ONC to identify at least one developed use case, but the proposer is going to describe it probably, right?
Yeah, I would hope the proposer would describe it in as much detail as available with the idea of hoping to get it into level two.
Yeah.
You know, but to get it as far along as possible.
So, I mean, it seems kind of obvious, but Sasha, do you remember what the rationale people gave for why this needs to be exchanged in an interoperable format?
I don't remember a specific rationale. I mean, all the ones that you mentioned certainly make sense to me, but I don't remember that there was which ones were cited back in, you know, the 2010 era.
So maybe if we sort of think back in the CMS thing, maybe one justification is, you know, so that CMS and other payers can make sure that patients are getting appropriate smoking cessation therapy or, you know, offers for smoking cessation. Maybe that's one justification that people gave, which is by tracking, you know, whether people are smokers, and I guess you would have to track whether they got smoking cessation medications or counseling or whatnot. So like a quality measure purpose. Although I assume that meant somebody had to also track whether you did something about it if they put it in a quality measure, and that was probably manual.
So if we're looking at the submission information, there are six questions in the draft. It's the, I think we're discussing kind of the why, but it's just a proposed name, why the data element should be captured and available for exchange nationwide, and any applicable use cases. I'm giving a summary of these, but do systems currently capture this data element with details if available? Do standards exist to represent and exchange this data? And number five is describe any connectathon testing pilots or production use for the data. And number six is just anything else that you'd like to add. And one of our recommendations is to put a area for a letter support for this. So if we go through those questions, maybe it'll help with this section. I can dump them in the Google Doc with copy and paste if you want.
If this were being done in the modern era, probably the approach would be like, you know, yes, and we've, you know, used smoking data, maybe in each or specific mechanisms, perhaps. I don't know, or whether they'd have to say, yes, we did it, and in fact, we use the standard-based mechanisms to use smoking, but I assume the kind of information that could be provided are things like, yeah, no, in our system, we, you know, identified patients who were smokers and used this approach to refer them to our state quit line, and we were able to reduce smoking rates by X percent. Like, I assume that's the kind of thing, right? Which, you know, if projected out, probably saved this many lives. And I guess, you know, the Argonaut process seems like something that fits into this approach. I guess, I don't know if there's a non-Argonaut process that would bring multiple vendors together for something like this right now that's established. And, you know, like what would it look like, for example, if you want to get to the later levels where you have two or three HR vendors who have agreed to test things out with their clients and health systems?
Ken, in my experience, that happens in a lot of different sort of standards development activities, Argonauts being one example, but you know, HL7 work groups on standards that are not Argonauts have certainly had similar types of activity, standards development work that happens through other organizations, NCPDP or what have you, would be similar to. So I would, I guess, generalize into, you know, that being the type of work that often happens in the standards development community.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the expectation almost is that the bar is not really ONC agreeing that this is important, right? In the way we're talking about it here, the bar is identifying other health systems, other stakeholder groups, and importantly, EHR vendors to agree that this is an important thing to test out in whatever form and to actually test it out and to show value, right?
Well, it wouldn't have to only be tested by an EHR, right? I mean, some of these things, ejection fraction being an obvious example, are going to need, you know, specialty systems as some of the primary pilot things. Some of them are going to require labs, pharmacy systems, PDMPs, patient applications. I guess depending on the standard in question, I think there's actually a wide variety of health IT that might be involved in piloting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I guess the question is does the USCD like what is the USCDI process within sort of that early phase? Is it intended to facilitate, identify priority things and help resource it, bring people together? Or is it really intended to say, hey guys, figure out what's important and that what you're able to get stakeholders together on and come back to us once you've sort of validated it and then we can put it through the process? I mean, that's an important question, right? Like, do we anticipate the USCDI process to include, once somebody's proposed it and it looks like a good idea, to help facilitate, you know, groups coming together, helping to fund it, helping to coordinate it, or is it really USCDI, at least from the ONC end, starts once a lot of that groundwork's been done and pushed in?
I think it's more the latter case that you describe, because especially early on, presumably there's going to be a pretty large group of items being brought forward, and ONC isn't going to have the resources to babysit or advocate all of them. That those that kind of apply for support, as we've been discussing, for advocacy from the ONC might get that. But it seems like in the first couple of years, it's just going to be folks bringing stuff forward where they have an established constituency, and we just have to say, these are all the boxes that you need to check.
So this is great discussion, and we've talked about like the kind of a technical advisory committee. I'd like to keep the discussion on track for today at looking at the actual promotion criteria, because it's the biggest gap in our recommendations. So let's like think very the technical process and come back to that part with like the how we get data elements actually pushed through with like ONC support, no one's ONC support. Sorry guys.
Christina, amplify that a little bit, please.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to, I think we were going to go down a rabbit hole on talking about the potentially something that we're all very passionate about on how the data elements actually get pushed through kind of by a champion. And I wanted to really focus, Ken asked if this was more on the technical part where it's like, these are the steps A, B, and C that you take. And that's the role of USCDI versus do we have like a process in place to have champions, for lack of better words, on the side pushing through. And I was saying for the purpose of this call, I think both are very important and we've identified that as a task force. But for this call, I wanted us to stay kind of more very laser focused on that first piece, which are what are the checkboxes, the user guide, the very technical black and white steps A, B, and C to get through the process. I think, like I said, both are really important, and the latter is one that I think that we definitely want to talk about more, but just want us to keep moving through with the kind of the steps in the user guide.
So should we take the six items in the application form as being the sort of the first steps?
Well, why don't we, do we have a actual application form draft? Maybe we should look at that and, like, what would those instructions look like? And I think based on this discussion, I'm thinking there should be a checkbox on do you, you know, request, you know, ONC support in helping to champion this and to identify potential stakeholder groups that can help you pilot this, right? Or, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, or do you want to be connected with other people who are interested in this? Like, how do you get these people together and, you know, resource links to here's these other projects and how you can get in touch with the folks who could, you know, help you potentially, you know, take this idea and if deem it worthy of one of their next demonstration projects, et cetera. Right? Like, if we're talking about artifacts, let's, like, actually look at the artifacts and, you know, how these ideas translate into the actual forms and processes people go through.
I really like that suggestion, Ken, as part of the submission to add a interest and kind of a follow option.
So, and I don't, Adam, correct me, but I don't know if there's a mock-up of the application form rather than just a list of questions.
No, there's not a literal mock-up of the form. The submission information elements that are in the USCDI promotion model document, you know, will be built into the web platform that people will submit their data element submissions on. But we don't have a, you know, literal, this is what the form is going to look like.
Okay.
Well, we can just use those questions to start.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't have to be a literal form. It can literally be the questions on a Google spreadsheet that we review. But like whereas right here in the spreadsheet, we have like topics of questions or issues. But as we're talking about it, it doesn't actually affect the actual questions that are meant to be asked or to be information to be submitted, right? Like literally, you know, what is the data element? But like it exists somewhere else. And I guess the question is, like, in testing out and thinking through, would this process work? I mean, it seems like, and is it missing something? It seems like taking an example like tobacco cessation and actually walking through the questions and how you would answer them seems like it would be reasonable.
No, I think that's great. So maybe we need the six questions popped into another column or opposite comment.
Yeah.
I'm doing it right now.
Perfect.
Where should we put them? I've got the first one ready to pop.
How about in column E?
Okay, I'm going to drop them right here.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good spot right there. Yeah, and then, you know, then again, Ken, I think you're absolutely right to take the very specific example and how would we answer it?
Yeah.
And what sort of specification should we, what guidance should we give to the user, to the submitter?
Yes. Essentially, like, we, in drafting these questions, should pilot them ourselves.
Right, exactly. Right. Maybe, Christina, you want to put a column between E and F just so we can
hold on. I'm still dropping. I was taking too many tabs opened.
Okay.
And it's possible, I mean, smoking cessation is a good one, but it's possible we may want to potentially take something that like nobody disagreed with, if there is such a thing, to be included in the current USCDI and do that too. Like, just a thought, right? Like, we may want to start with the easiest, most slam dunk case where there was like no controversy about it, and push that through with the assumption, like, if the process can't work with something like that, it's a really bad process. I mean, could we do something like, I don't know, the patient's gender? I don't, right? Like, we're, you know, although, well, with the current way, yeah, maybe that's not the best one. Patient's date of birth, I don't know.
Frontoaccipital circumference. Yeah.
But and something that's currently already included.
Okay.
Or, I don't know, is problem list controversial?
Yeah.
Some of the stuff around SNOMED was initially controversial. I would say if you're looking for something non-controversial, it would probably be like medications or allergies. Medications are complicated, of course. Maybe allergies.
So are allergies. Wait,
can we do
what about allergies?
Yeah, medication allergies, I guess, to be specific from what was previously in USCDI.
Yeah.
Is WAKE currently part of USCDI?
Yeah, it's part of VITALS.
Yep.
Was that controversial at all?
It was at one point, because in an effort to make sure that capture was discrete, ONC indicated that there was a lot of complexity about how you would capture units. So as a safety feature, because pounds and kilograms are so similar, you know, our software requires you to distinguish. ONC had this misguided sense that you couldn't put anything besides a number in one field to capture weight in an earlier version of the certification proposal. So,
as in you couldn't put the units?
Correct, yeah.
Well, that's insane. Wow.
Fortunately, that was reconsidered.
Okay.
But it did turn out to be controversial, so just to, you know, show you even the simplest case.
Maybe medication allergies is a good one too, because it's something that you expect people to have captured from different systems. Maybe we can run through that one.
I think it's probably the best one, and again, distinguish allergies from
adverse
intolerance, you know, and medications from all others.
This is all complicated, isn't it? It's pretty bad when we can't find a single thing that would be a slam dunk.
Well, this is why we always have to explain to people that healthcare is more complicated than dollars and cents and other kinds of domains, right?
Okay, so let's Christina, could you move column F over, make column FG, or just insert a new column between E and F? Yeah, there we go.
Well, Adam and I did it at the same time, I think.
What? How about, despite the complication, it seems like still weight is more simple than allergies because of the things like intolerances. Should we just walk through weight and see how it would work?
We can just ignore the momentary confusion about units in capture.
Okay.
All right.
It seems like we would be able to answer data element proposed name and description. It'd be like, you know, patient weight, and it would be, you know, I don't know how you describe weight other than weight, but I'm sure someone can do it. And then why should we actually do it then.
I think there are implications of your name choice, you know, so what are the characteristics of the name choice? You know, clarity, specificity, general acceptance, you know, so do we have to worry about that, or can someone call weight an automobile?
I think it should be called weight. I don't know what else you would call weight.
does get controversial, though, because, right, like, people probably thought the same thing about height temporarily, and then everyone pointed out that, like, for babies, you have to have length, and there does have to be some thought, too.
Yeah, or it could be the dry weight versus wet weight, that kind of thing.
Right, closed, unclosed.
Dosing weight. But generically weight, I guess, and then this makes me think, too, like when you type in weight in the system or whatnot, it should probably do an auto search for people who've entered weight or a synonym to weight. So maybe you should also be asked to put any synonyms that might be used. Right. So it could help with the, you know, finding similar. And the backend system probably should identify those synonyms and say, hey, look at these other things. Like, did somebody else already enter this? And do you just want to add more information to support it, right?
Right. I mean, if you think of all the words that are used for something like an advanced directive, then having synonyms to help identify potentially duplicative concepts would be really important.
Yeah.
Great. That would be for name. Okay. And, okay. So, again, collecting the synonym, using the generic name, so that's really the, sort of the common name for that category. And associated synonym, I think that's an excellent suggestion. Okay. Number two. Why should it be collected? So how much of an explanation do we think is required? And what should that be? Should it be the clinical justification, the public health justification, the population health management? All of those? Any of those?
I think whichever ones apply.
Right. So we should say, you know, all applicable reasons.
Well, or would we say here, like, I mean, like if we were doing it, wouldn't we say something like, you know, weight is a very important health metric, and combined with height in terms of body mass index? Or, you know, in the case of children, weight percentiles has significant implications on, you know, morbidity and mortality, right? And in terms of medication dosing, in particular for children, impacts the appropriate medication dosage that should be given. I would assume, like, if we were really filling out to justify why weight should be shared, like, things like that would be the case. And we could say, like, you know, in you know, diseases like congestive heart failure, managing, like, monitoring weight is very important. I think those would be the kind of things I assume we would say. And in particular, like, why you need to share it sort of in an interoperable form might be that, you know, oftentimes you want to see the trajectory of weight over time, and the weight might have been captured at different places.
So how much, so when we answer the question, what suggestions then do we give to the user about the why?
I think this might be the kind of place where if the form had examples of what would be considered, what, you know, maybe it updates, right? Like, to say, like, you know, these are the things that have moved forward. Or actually, you know what would be really useful for ONC to do? It would be to take everything that's currently in the USCDI and to have sample answers that would be considered reasonable for each of these things written out. Like, that would be awesome, right? To say, hey, guys, here's examples of everything that's currently been included in USCDI and what ONC considers to be compelling, you know, reasons why they should be all level 5 or level 4 or whatever. I know that would add a lot of work to ONC staff, but it seems like a reasonable thing to ask.
Well, it would be work to go back and assemble it for what's already there, but it could certainly be collected going forward, right? This is the data that was submitted that got this through to the point that it is.
Yes, certainly for going forward, and would be helpful for going back to.
Again, being specific about the level of detail that would help. So the decision that ONC is going to have to be making based on the application is, where do we start this data element out in the process? Does it stay in comments? Does it meet level one criteria? Does it meet level two criteria? Those are the three choices, my understanding.
Yeah, but I really like that idea of maintaining a public database of all that has been submitted for past items so people can go back and reference all of them and see how it's gone.
Maybe along those lines, it's like, if assuming ONC is the deliberating body, or like we become one, I don't know who's going to actually deliberate these, but if they could have some structured scoring of these, right? Like, this was deemed to be good or bad or not meet requirements or whatever, that could be attached to these answers, then people can, it's publicly available and you can search. Say, I want to search for things that were rated highly for moving forward to the next step, and I want to see what was written there. You know what I'm saying? Because then you have and it's also very clear why something was promoted and why something wasn't. Because otherwise people will have things that don't get promoted and will be pretty frustrated. And if it's clear what did get moved forward, I think that would help increase confidence in the USCDI process versus thinking, you know, something must be rigged somewhere.
It sounds like two pieces. You almost need a taxonomy of, you know, why data elements are good to have for the various use reasons and use cases. And then the other is a weighting system. This reason.
It might not be that complex, right? It could be as simple as, this is cleared for moving to level two, and this is cleared for moving to level one, or this is stuck in comment.
Why? Why?
Ideally a why.
Why is it cleared? I mean, that's the issue. Because
Yeah.
It's got to, you know, so I guess the question is, sort of, what does this get back to, sort of the national interest, the societal interest, the global interest? Where are those interests, and how does this data element support them? The quadruple aim now is maybe a reasonable target.
If it is a criteria, then I don't know if they need to explicitly answer each one, but that would be useful if you want to look for things that failed because it met three of the criteria but not the fourth one, kind of thing. But assuming there's ones that move to the next level, just seeing what was put in those applications should be helpful, even just that, right? Just searchable list of things that made it to the next cut. And if I were putting something in, I would look for the one that made it to the latest, you know, the furthest cut, and start looking from there to say, what did they put in there that was so compelling?
I think item two, the why, is really the critical one for even getting out of the comment box, you know, ever. If there's not a compelling why for the data element, 3, 4, 5 are really later. That kind of gets you, those things kind of get you into level one. You know, systems currently capture, and whether there's standards that exist, and whether someone's...
That is true too, but I think maybe 5 is also critical, right? Like,
but that gets you, that's sort of a level one requirement.
I guess what I'm thinking is, like, if major EHR vendors, for example, work with, you know, a variety of health systems to pilot something, there must have been a reason why it was useful, right? So it's like, does that make sense? Like, you know, anyway, we're getting queued to go to public comment.
Okay. So, Lauren, should we go to public comment?
Okay, sure. Operator, can we open the line?
If you would like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
Okay, any comments in the queue?
There are no comments at this time.
Okay, we'll leave it open for the last 10 minutes or so. Terry?
Well, let's carry on. So, again, sort of the why, maybe we just have a short list of important whys, and if someone is not on that short list, then they can propose another compelling why.
Yeah, and I guess along these lines, I think what another thing we're discussing is, like, especially if there's like 100 or 1,000 of these things, right, or 10,000 of these that people submit, I don't know, or it might be 3, who knows, but like assuming a bunch of folks submit a variety of items, I think it gets to the point that like it would be useful both for ONC's purposes and for the public to have it be searchable, if that makes sense. So maybe it's like, you know, kind of like the National Library of Medicine for journal articles does the mesh subject heading mappings. Whether it's on the back end it gets tagged and classified, or maybe the front end starts with, you know, some pilot testing, right? Asking people to, you know, participate in a pilot to submit these things and get like the first 100 and to create a taxonomy or a more structured data entry form. Right, you know, with of course an other always available. Like, but for number 2, like actually saying a form that says, you know, like what's the clinical benefit, what's the financial benefit, whatever, what's the equity benefit.
Yep.
I don't know if that makes sense, but having it so it's easier to be able to understand, sort of like, you know, to get more structured data out of it. And analyses out of it, I assume, would be useful, but I don't know.
And there's also, I think you've also hinted at a potential additional role for ONC in managing the comments, and that's sort of as an aggregator. So looking at elements that are similar but not exact, sort of how do they... You know, can they be grouped rather than split?
Yeah. You can imagine an adjudication could be on everyone who proposed something on weight, where everyone's comments were amalgamated, right? And said, okay, yeah. ONC is looking at these 15 comments that have been received on weight, and, you know, adding it all together, we made this decision. And I assume the answer would have been yes. For number 3, do systems currently capture this data? And then I think along the lines of what we were discussing earlier, I think it needs to say, are they currently capturing the data element, and is it free text, right? And so I think there's elements of, is it free text versus structured that needs to be captured for number 3? And if it's structured, you know, what are the, I guess, you know, how is it being captured currently? Like, is it, are people capturing it using, you know, codes that are, you know, already translatable to SNOMED, ICD, et cetera? Like, are they capturing it basically in pounds and kilograms? Like, you know, that kind of stuff probably should be specified. At the very least, free text versus structured, and if structured, what structure?
Okay.
And then the, I think the other...
Started?
Yeah, and the, I think the other sort of axis for this is how frequently. You know, is this a almost always capture where relevant, or is it a sometimes capture? Like, that probably is really important, right? So, for example, weight, that's a pretty much always or almost always captured data field, right? Like, you can't, most healthcare systems, you cannot enter and not have a weight, and probably not often, you know, almost always you would get weight, right?
Well,
whereas,
this is one of those things, yeah. Ken, where, you know, the dermatologists have to collect weights. Do
no, they
optometrists
don't.
Have to collect weights?
No. They don't have to fill out the form, but if someone's proposing weight, it probably won't be an optometrist.
Right.
So
it's just on the application side.
Yeah,
it's saying, like, how often is it captured? So I guess the key question might be if applicable, though, depending on what you know, if it's kids, certainly you should probably weigh them regardless of what specialty you're on, right? Because you get dose-dependent medications. I'm sorry,
yeah.
Weight-dependent. But
so what if you just say, yeah, so it might be situational, but so what if you said never, occasionally, frequently, always?
Yeah, or almost always. Like, that would be really useful, right? Because if it's almost always already being captured in structured form, that's pretty important. And anyway.
I guess the element that is missing from that list of pick list choices is, there's some data elements that you would capture, like, once per patient, you know. You might almost always have a patient's race recorded, but you're likely going to record it once. And not every time they come in for a visit. Whereas weight, again, frequently recorded, but often needs to be refreshed too, right? It's a changing, changing data element over time. And so I guess there's multiple elements to this. It's sort of like, how often is it applicable to capture weight at all?
Well, there's a whole category of once in a lifetime data elements, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
And so then there's a sense of like, is it something... Yeah, is it evolving? Does it change?
Mm-hmm. So maybe that's like...
Aren't we really interested in things that are changing rather than static? So if it's static...
I think we're interested in both, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we clearly care about patients' race because it affects clinical care guidelines, and we clearly care about patient's weight because that changes, but I think we care about both. I think it's getting at the notion, maybe like what we're getting at with this how frequently is, you know, if this were to be needed to be, you know, captured for relevant patients at the relevant frequency, right, which may be once or, you know, maybe never, or sorry, maybe always, like how much of a additional burden would this add to users, or like, you know, like that's what it's getting at, right? Like, are we going to have to ask people to start collecting something they're not already collecting? Maybe we just ask it that way, right? If this were to make it into USCDI, something along those lines, because I think that's what we're talking about. Oh, and I think we're almost out of time.
Yeah, I was about to say, I think that may be our last parting shot. Okay, I'll tell you what, as a charge to the group, kind of go through these and please jot your thoughts down briefly. And again, this is to inform the application form. And so we may come back to this as we find we need other elements as we progress through the different levels. Anyway, we're off and running. So next week, 2 weeks, we will pick this up here again and move it through hopefully another level and a half. But the great suggestions, great participation. Thank you all. See you in 2 weeks.
Thanks, Terry.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right.
Thanks.
Bye. Bye.